Good morning, boys and girls. Yes, Radio Fishing is back. Whether you liked it or not, we came back. Yes, indeed. And we've got one of our old friends of the show, Captain Rhett Morris. We're going to be talking about all this fishing going on out there, and in some cases, the good part of it and the bad part of it. And let's see. Tent sales coming up March 19th. It's going to be a big one. Rhett's going to be there. If you'd like to meet and talk to Rhett, he is going to be in the Miralor booth. And when you go out the front door of the store, go to the left, you'll go to Rapala, and then it'll be American Fishing Wear and Miralor. And Rhett's going to be in the booth with Eric Botnick, the owner of Miralor. And it's going to be a great day out there. Kind of getting excited about March 19th.
Absolutely, Frank. I couldn't agree more. We had a great time last year. I'm really looking forward to that.
This is, it's a little bit, we've added several more. We lost a couple. Rockport Rattler, they have a prior engagement. They can't come this year. They sent their apologies. And one other one. But we've had Penn and Quantum Fenor. And this year we've added Akuma. Akuma's coming in a big way. Daiwa's coming. So we've got two cool. New reel companies. We got Penn and Akuma. We've got Reaper rods, TFO rods. What's the Gary Loomis's one? Edge. Mm-hmm. TFO and Edge is going to be there. Redbone Calico Jack is coming.
Cool.
We've got a really cool lineup. We got a lot of new lure companies. Strike King's coming for the first time.
Great.
Savage Lures is coming. I mean, and everybody was here last year, with the exception of a couple. So it's going to be a big show.
That's awesome, man. I know last year's show was great. So putting a new spin on it's going to make it even better.
And, you know, well, you know, I never want Stairway to Heaven to be my first song. We always want to build it up. And every year we try to add two or three. I don't know where we're going to go after this year. I'm pretty much going to max out the space I have. Mm-hmm. And maybe on the roof.
Let's do it. You
know, maybe some ladders. You could just go up on the roof and give a nice view. We could maybe, you know, put a couple of booths and a party deck up there.
Some palm trees, some neon lights. I'm into it.
So, how you been, buddy?
been struggling a little bit this winter, Frank. We started out the winter just loving life. We had a warm November, very warm December.
Wasn't December amazing?
It was unbelievable. It actually was, without a doubt, the finest fishing that I've seen in the month of December in my 20-plus year career.
It was absolutely spectacular, but the water was from 75 to 80 degrees, perfect water temperatures. I mean, it was wonderful to be on the water, and everything was great. And dun, 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 dun.
Oh, man.
I don't know who ever invented El Nino, but if I could get him in a dark room for just a couple of minutes.
Oh, God, man, it has been terrible. You know, a lot of clients were like, well, this winter's going so mild. Do you think it'll carry on? And I said, you know, the weather has been so calm and gorgeous for so long into this winter so far. I just know that we're going to have to pay the piper sooner or later. And, man, are we paying for it now?
Isn't that amazing? I mean, you know, and I came out of 2015, the biggest year the store ever had. I mean, just going gangbusters, and you can't fight the weather.
Nope.
I mean, I'm staffed up like it's 2015, and it's like, and yeah. I don't, you know, and I look around, I go, you know, I don't blame them. I don't want to be out in it. It's,
yeah.
There's like 2 days a week where you want to go out, and the other, you know, 5 days you're just going, man, this is colder, it's windier, it's rainier, and yeah, on and on and on again. How's the fresh water affecting it out there?
Well, the biggest problem I've seen from the fresh water so far is that it has basically dried out the harbor of any kind of sardines. There are some left in the harbor. I've seen in the middle of the bay real deep spots, and it's very little whispers of it, nothing you can even catch with a cast net, and they only show up when it's really, you know, beautiful, hot, sunny, calm days, which are obviously only one or two a week. So fishing with live bait or catching any kind of live bait is not really an option. And to be honest with you, the temperatures of the bay are so low, even if you had it, you're not going to really do any good with it, because we're fishing. Today I'm going out, it's going to be in the 50s, the water temperature. And it might, you know, tickle 60 or the lower 60s by midday. And we're just shrimp fishing. Live shrimp fishing's been by far the best for me. I'm fishing shrimp under a cork, shrimp on a jig head, free line shrimp. Anything from selects through choice size has been working the best for me. And some days, you know, if you can find the right area that hasn't been overpressured yet, which is getting a little more difficult now, because now that we're into this long onset of winter, all the little deep holes and areas that normally will hold fish are steadily getting pillaged by the masses who are brave enough to go out in the weather.
Well, you know, you've got the recreational anglers, you got charter boat fishermen, you got the occasional tourist visitor and everybody down, and there's just, you know, it's a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of room out there, but there gets to be a lot of people because there's limited amount of access to spots that will hold fish in this kind of weather. Like in December, you have 80% more choices,
yep,
of places that will hold fish.
Yep.
And now the choices are going narrower and narrower, and it becomes a little more challenging.
Yeah, it sure does. But, you know, that's part of the allure of what makes fishing so rewarding when you figure it out. I mean, it's a puzzle, and every single month of every single year is all about figuring it out. You got to just keep working at it.
That's, you know, I try and tell people, they come down and say, well, I don't know what I'm doing and I don't want to go in and all that. I says, man, are you kidding me? I said, that's the best part. Excuse me. For me and you, Charlotte Harbor is like a best buddy, an old pal.
That's exactly.
It's
right.
The familiar old acquaintance, you know, one that we can go up to and we just, you know it, and we know everything, all its little secrets and idiosyncrasies and stuff. But when you first move here, I mean, it's brand new, mm-hmm, and there's so much to learn and so much to do. That's the funnest part.
Exactly. I tell people that all the time, Frank, when I get with somebody brand new who just moved here, and I'll take them out on their boat and kind of show them the lay of the land, and they're like, well, I just don't know, you know, where to go. What should I do with this? And what should I just, you know, it's a little bit intimidating. And I'm like, buddy, you don't understand. You're in some of the most fun times,
oh, yeah,
of your fishing career here, because it's so brand new. Every time you go somewhere, it's a new spot. And that's what makes it so exciting, is your adventure is huge when you first get here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole Lewis and Clark exploring, yeah, the West. I mean,
yes,
you know, you get out there and it's just, and I try and tell people, the best thing I can tell you about figuring out where to go fish, drive along and then all of a sudden go, oh my God, turn left, go stop and fish.
Yeah.
For no reason at all. You might find the best fishing spot of all. The more you overthink it, because Charlotte Harbor is easy to overthink. You know, sometimes stop and fish.
I couldn't agree more, Frank. I tell, you know, I've started a half a dozen new fishing guides in the last few years. And when I handpick these guys, I look for raw fishing talent. I look for a good personality so they treat people well. And I tell these guys over and over again, trust your gut. If you're driving along and you see an island that just looks good, you've never fished it, or maybe you fished it 2 years ago and didn't catch anything, but it looks good that day, and it feels right, just stop and go fish it. Trust your gut, because, you know, we do have a sixth sense, even though a lot of people don't like to admit it, that there's a lot more to a person than just the regular five senses that make you who you are as a person. And you have got to trust that ability to sort of channel in on other things that help you figure it out. And in the fishing world, I believe that is way more effective than going where you read online that the fish are biting, because most of the time it could be a day late or a month late.
That's the one thing about down here. I remember very, very early in my career here in the bait shop, I would be telling, in the newspaper, telling places to go and fish that were there and all that. And, boy, people were mad at me because I was one of the first ones to ever do it here. And I say, but you know as well as I do, those fish are there for a day, a week, or whatever, and then they're 100 yards down the shoreline, or mm-hmm, they're there an hour, that they're, you know, they move. There's no great spot. There's no spot where you can go and catch fish. That's the one tough thing about Charlotte Harbor, mm-hmm, is following the movements of the fish, because we actually get so many fish, they feed out an area,
mm-hmm,
or just get tired of it, or the weather changes and they're going to move to a different area. But the whole interesting, exciting part of it all is just finding out, okay, well, the weather dropped. It's 3 degrees cooler than it was yesterday. Now, am I going to go over here? And, okay, I think the fish are going to be over here. And tide's falling, so they're going to be just outside the bar here. Or, yeah. Okay, we got a tide over here. They're going to be back in that hole. Or, like you're saying about the deeper spots, you know, colder water. Salt water is very different than fresh water. And the aspect is that as salt water gets too cold, it gets a sheet of ice on it. Never gets any colder below that then.
Mm-hmm.
It's always 33, 35 degrees below that sheet of ice.
Mm-hmm.
But down here, as it gets colder, it can get colder and colder. 29, 28, 27 degrees, or I think it's 26 where the salt water starts mm-hmm. to freeze. So, you know, they go down 3-4 feet to get away from that surface
mm-hmm.
water. And that's about your break point, about between 3 and 4 feet, in order to avoid that instant surface change of a front or something.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've had, you know, back-to-back fronts here lately, so it has chilled the water a little deeper than it typically will, but it also warms just as fast. As soon as you get those nice warm days where the sun's shining.
Today?
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, the wind's backed off, and the water's going to warm nicely. And that's what the puzzle's all about. You have to get out there and spend time on the water. You know, I talk to people all the time that are like, man, I just can't figure it out. And I'm, well, how many times did you go fishing last month? Well, I was only able to get out there twice. And if you can only get 2 days a month, you know, I'm sorry that you can't make more time for the water. There's a lot of things in life that'll distract you and keep
life
you off
gets
the water.
Life gets in the way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, in any kind of fishing, I don't care if you're bass fishing Lake Okeechobee or fishing the harbor, you need to spend as much time as you can to figure it out. And 2 days a month in any body of water is not enough. So it's just time on the water. And that's what makes a fishing guide better than a guy who doesn't get to go often, because he goes almost every single day.
Well,
so
if they're you.
He's going to figure it out.
If they're you. I mean, I'm sorry, Ray. You've been in the business a long time. You've got a great clientele. You're booked all the time. And, you know, obviously, you got a little bit of time off today, which was kind of a nice break, because we've seen you most mornings getting shrimp, doing all the rest of that stuff. And every once in a while, it's kind of nice not to go out.
Yeah, it is. I mean, getting up at 4 a.m. and getting out there in the black dark, trying to make things right, find bait or whatever it is, does get a little old when it drags on day after day. So I had some older guys this morning who chose to use discretion, which is the better part of valor, and decided they didn't want to fight the wind, and right after we made the call, the wind actually started to die down, so the afternoon crew is going to try it.
But, yeah, that's the one thing about the weather now with El Nino, is you never know what the morning and afternoon thing is going to do.
Yeah, it is an unstable weather pattern.
Very unstable, and I don't really remember what's going to be going on, but with all this, it is kind of an on-again, off-again. And from what I've been hearing, afternoons have been the if within an option, afternoons are a little better than mornings.
Yeah, sure. You get that sun shining a little bit hotter. If there is a chance for the water to warm and the sun shining hard enough to make that happen, then you're definitely going to get a better bite in the afternoon with that sun beaming down.
You know, it's amazing. This season, and, you know, if you're not from Southwest Florida, you don't understand, but our years go by the season. And for us, this is, you know, October through, you know, June is our year,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right.
So we're talking about this year. Last year, it was chilly, a little bit chilly in December, but we had tarpon in Boca Grande Pass in January.
Yeah.
And then they left and came back in February. They left. And they were in March and April. We were doing tarpon.
Mm-hmm.
This year, we had tarpon in December.
Mm-hmm.
And then January, I think they're in Cuba by now.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're halfway smart.
Yeah, they're like, the heck with this, I'm out.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of dinks, a lot of short tarpon around. If you go back up in PGI, a few up on the river, some in the Port Charlotte canals, but they're holding in those really deep canals where they can go sound down real far.
Yeah, exactly. Those little juveniles are here for one main reason, and that's to just stay safe and stay out of the general migrational patterns of large-scale alpha predators like, you know, big bull sharks and hammerheads and whatnot. And usually takes them about 10 years living in the back part of the estuary before they'll get back out into rejoin the migrational herds around Boca Grande Pass. And then once they join the migration, they never stop until they're either eaten or they die.
Yeah, and I don't even know if anybody knows what a tarpon's lifespan would be, or even if they have one.
It's over 80 years.
Yeah.
They have tracked, they've aged fish just over 80 years, and the fish in Boca Grande Pass, they're you know, it depends on the fish's genetic makeup and how much, you know, how good of a habitat it was raised in as far as how fast they grow. But on average, you know, 120 pounder is sort of the upper edge of our average size fish in Charlotte Harbor. And, you know, those fish are anywhere from 20 years old to 30 years old, depending on, you know,
right,
how they've grown. Sometimes, you know, we caught a fish this past April, late April, and maybe it was early May. That fish was taped out at over 230 pounds, and I talked to some biologists about that tarp, and it was almost 8 feet long. They said that fish was, you know, somewhere in the excess of 60 years old. If
wow.
You can imagine that.
Oh, yeah, I get it.
It's crazy. They're like as old as we people.
Yeah, it's old as me.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I get it. It's a, you know, it's an amazing fish. One thing, you know, talking about aging of fish, with snook, believe it or not, most of them take, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, or 3, 4 years to get into the slot limit.
Mm-hmm.
Other ones can get there in 2 years, depending mm-hmm. upon their habitat.
That's right.
I mean, they can reach slot limit in less than 2 years, and some of them, it's 3 or 4 years. I mean, that's just weird.
Yeah, it is amazing. We went to the latest snook symposium up there in Orlando back on January 13th, and the latest data that the biologists from FWC had was, I think they said an average of like 6 years is the average time it takes a fish to hit 28 inches. Some fish were marking at 24, or, you know, 28 inches at 4 years, and the East Coast fish can grow faster than that, but the common snook species on the West Coast of Florida does grow slower than the East Coast fish. That's why they're still allowed 2, and we're into 1. But it was funny, their data showed very, very clearly that since the opening of the season in 2013 in the fall, we had seen a very clear and present decline in the number of snook over 30 inches, which is obviously right around where the slot starts at 28. And the overall numbers of snook are rising steadily, but the trophy size fish and bigger fish are definitely showing a decline. It just shows you that fishing pressure and the angling public are really good at what they do. I mean,
well, we catch and release about 1 million snook a year on the west coast of Florida. They catch and release about 200,000 to 300,000 on the east coast. Now the east coast, I don't under, you tell me, well, this is why they get that. No, somebody pays FWC to keep that slot limit or that bag limit,
yeah,
over there.
The
because
lobbying.
Yeah, they get paid because, you know, that's lobbying, lobby money, because they have never reached the 40% perfect ratio
SPR
of, you know, to getting through the slot limit.
Mm-hmm.
And while on the west coast of Florida, we are well over that. We've been over
at 60% now.
Yeah, we were in the 50% and 60, almost 60%. We were 56, 58. And while the East Coast is 36, 38%, they still allow 2 snook. We only get 1 snook,
mm-hmm.
even though our numbers are better consistently throughout everything. So to me, it boils down, FWC's getting paid. There's a lobbyist involved. Some group is able to put pressure on FWC to keep that way.
Yeah.
There's no other reason for it, because when you compare straight out numbers, I don't care about growth of fish, numbers to numbers, the West Coast is, we are the supreme being of the two coasts.
Mm-hmm.
We are, you know, they just follow along way back in there in our coattails.
Yeah, that's right, man. Yeah, we have a very powerful snook fishery, there's no doubt. But moving forward in the future, one thing I'd love to see is if they would entertain the idea of even if it was a temporary test period of increasing the minimum size of the slot on those snook. And the reason I'd like to see it personally is
I would like to see the slot go from, I'm thinking 40 to, what is it, 5-inch slot? 40
mm-hmm.
to 45.
Yeah, can you imagine, Frank, what that would do to our fishery?
I hate the idea of taking prime breeding snook.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea. Now, I could be wrong, but my understanding is snook live 20, 25 years.
Yeah, that's just the ones they've aged.
You know what I mean? So let's do the same thing as nature. Let's take that top end out. Now, every other species on the planet, as they get older, humans included,
yeah,
if a guy 60 years old has babies, he's passing on more genetic defects.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, that's why, you know, you're supposed to have kids, you know, when you're young.
That's
and,
right.
You know, there's much more possibility of problems in the genetic lines. So why are we taking the perfect fish when we should be taking the older fish? And, you know, you grew up around the same guys as I did. You know, all the guys that were coming in with the 48, mm-hmm. 52 inch.
It's the only
snook.
Size I was taught to keep as a kid. 40-plus inches.
They taste better than the little ones.
Yeah.
I know. The only people who think small snook taste better than big snook are the people who catch small snook.
That's right.
There's only one reason you don't know that big snook tastes better, and that's because you've never caught one.
And, you know, the part of the problem or reason for people saying that and not having experienced the catch of the big fish is that the numbers just aren't there anymore. I mean, if we change that slot around here, Frank, within 3 years, three short years, you would see so many snook over 30 inches, it would make your head spin.
And I'm personally, because I've, you know, I keep my charter license up, I'm not doing charters anymore, but when I was doing charters, we would catch release on some days, I mean, hundreds of snook, you know, between mm-hmm. the two or three trips that I would do that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought in my mind, how cool would this be if we were catching releasing 39 and a half inch snook all day?
It was incredible. You know, you remember in the 80s when I started, I caught my first snook in 1984. And I was fishing with a guy, Dale McDaniel, who was...
Oh, I remember Dale.
Yeah, he was an awesome big snook fisherman.
Oh, yeah, Dale was... man. Oh, there was a few of them. Dale McDaniels, Bill Johnson, Norman Day, my dad was one of them.
Yeah.
There was a few other ones too. I mean,
yeah, they were always bringing those big fish to the dock, and we went out that day, Frank. I'll never forget this. In April, we caught over 40 fish. I was an 8-year-old little boy, and his son was 8 years old, and we caught over 40 fish that day, over 10 pounds.
Yep.
And we kept two that were 25 plus pounders. We let everything else go. And the first fish I actually landed was about a 12-pounder, you know, 34 inches or so. And I said, can we keep it? And he kind of smacked it out of my hand. He said, no, we don't keep those little fish. We keep the big fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, my lips started poking out, started getting a little teary-eyed. I couldn't believe that. This is the biggest fish I ever saw in my life.
Right.
And the next fish I caught was a 20-pounder. And then we put that one on the stringer and ended up releasing it. I'd say the average fish were 15 to 18 pounds.
I would love for people to be able to experience what we were allowed to experience back then.
You know, it can happen. But the reason I believe it'll happen, Frank, is sooner or later we'll get people to come around in their average way of thinking and start listening to what people say about the way things used to be and how it can come back. And we have the building blocks here. The harbor can sustain it. It will grow it. All we have to do is convince people to let it grow, and it'll come right back.
If two things got to change, backyard legal, and I think we need to get the Charlotte County ordinances about fishing.
Yes.
So our sheriff's department can go out and make money giving fishing violations.
Yes.
Once it's in the county's interest where they're going to make money on these fishing violations, and then FWC can do whatever they want when Charlotte County's done with them. But if we create our own local ordinances, that will stop all the stuff going on at the Shell Creek Dam, at the Sansucci, mm-hmm. at the Elgin and all these other places where, you know, and backyard legal. That would put an end to a lot of it. And not so much worried about, like, the trout and stuff like that, but just because I know what you and I had.
Yeah.
And what we were able to experience. I mean, going out catching these monster fish. And it's just so cool. You remember doing it at night?
Yeah.
And you hear that fish come up. You can't really see him, but you hear his head go side to side. You can hear the gill plates going brrrt, brrrt.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, God,
that sound of that gill plates. Man, I got chills just thinking about it.
Absolutely.
I would love for people to be able to experience that.
You're so right, my man. And what I wish that we could, if you could just wind the clock back for 1 week and let the fishing public see this place the way it was in the late 80s, early 90s, they would understand that the difference between a 28-inch barely keeper and a 35-inch snook is like night and day. They're like two completely different animals.
They're both amazing. I mean, I like catching 24, 26, 28-inch snook. They're a lot of fun. On a 6 to 12 rod,
right.
Take a 6 to 12 rod, 2,500 reel, nice light line, and they're an amazing fish. And they skyrocket, and they just do some amazing battles coming in. More so than the bigger fish, as far as the acrobatics. You know, some of these big old fish, they're so big and fat, they can't get their butt out of the water anymore.
But they,
you know,
they want to. Drag.
They want to, but they can't. But these smaller fish are visually stunning.
Mm-hmm.
And that 24 to 34 inch is your most visually stunning fish.
Mm-hmm.
They give the best jumps and the flips, and I mean, they just visually amazing. But when you get into those monsters, and the neat part about it is you still have all those small fish, but even bigger numbers.
Yes, much bigger numbers.
And the one thing most people don't realize is that big snook, small snook, normal size, slot limit fish and stuff, they go to an area and they don't really travel much more than a half a mile one way or the other. They pick an area and that's kind of where they hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Big snook are not like that. Big snook, 40 some inch snook, go out to the reefs. They're big fish now. Mm-hmm. They can go out and compete on the reefs in the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
They'll travel up and down the coast. You know, they get the Winnebago. They're off to see the country.
That's right.
You know, they're, you know, hey, I'm retired now. I don't have to do this. I'm just going to go cruising.
Amen.
And so a lot of these big fish, you know, once they get up a little bit over 40 inches, they do start to leave the area. And they're no longer fish we can fish for.
Yep.
So we're not losing anything. They're not contributing to the egg. They're not contributing to the spawn. So let's take those that are not really contributing anymore, leave the best breeders, you know, and let them go play and have fun. Do catch and release on those. But let's take those big ones, the better eating monster fish. I mean, just cool fish.
And there's no wow factor in the world like showing up at the dock with a snook over 40 inches. You want to impress somebody? I mean, when I was a kid fishing around here, even when I started charter fishing, the snook tackle we used was a 30-pound test mono with 50-pound leader and a 4-aught hook. That's what you snook fished with.
And you remember big coolers in the front of the store?
Yeah.
Remember those big ones on the floor when you used to come in when you were a kid?
That's right.
Yeah, those big styrofoam coolers.
It was one of the big attractions.
You know, they'd be all iced up, and inside there, there'd be 40-inch snook laying in there.
Mm-hmm.
And people would come in, you'd open the lid, and say, "Ever see a snook? No, here's one right here."
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I put a 37-inch one in there one day, because I caught it. I thought it was pretty good. And, man, I got ridiculed for, I mean, gosh, you know, I learned, if it ain't 40, don't bring it in.
Yeah.
Yep. So, it was cool, but it was a different time. But I think the main thing both you and I are thinking of is we'd like our kids and our grandkids and our friends, neighbors, the tourists, all to be able to have that amazing experience that we did. We're not saying that we're having bad experiences now, but there's a difference between a good experience and, oh my gosh.
Exactly.
That's all. We're just nostalgic. We'd like to be able to share what we did.
Exactly. I don't want people to see the way it used to be, because it was so much more spectacular than the way it is now. We still have great fishing in this
fishery. Some of the best in the world,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And that says an awful lot, considering how far it's come down.
And amazingly, I think the one cool thing about it is that there's enough people like me and you trying to change the ideas of the law to get them to, okay, yes, this was a good idea. It was a nice try. And it was a cool idea. But it's no longer valid.
Right.
Let's step up. It's not 1988. It's not 1994.
Yep.
This is 2016.
Proactive.
Let's change it. And if it doesn't work, we can always change it back.
Exactly.
But let's give it a shot. Let's really try.
Absolutely.
So anyway, you're out pretty much every day, and you're seeing like one out of three trips right now as being really good.
Exactly. We're just hitting, it's all about weather. You know, we're plugging along in the tough days, and then you'll catch the right weather one day, and the fish will really, really bite. You know, we've had some 150 trout days, and then we've had some 10 trout days. So it's just a part of the cycle right now, man. We're in this heavy winter, and you just got to do what you can.
Have you tried any cut bait lately?
I have not tried cut bait lately, but I talked to a couple of buddies that are trying cut bait, and they're seeing, I'd say, lower than average success.
Okay. I was just wondering, because as the weather gets colder, shrimp is the best bait. There's mm-hmm. nothing as good as shrimp once that water gets from 60 and down. You really want shrimp. But I just wondering, because sometimes the cut bait thing works out. I've been hearing the same thing where cut bait really isn't working. If you're going to catch fish, try and have some shrimp.
Yeah, live shrimp or dead shrimp, but live shrimp's definitely been the key for me. And again, I'm not seeing a pattern. If it's real sunny out, seems like bobber. Shrimp under a bobber works great. If it's kind of an overcast day like we have today with a little bit of wind and stuff, I'm putting them on the bottom on a jig, and I do better that way. Work them slow.
Now, are you pinching the tail?
I don't. I hook them in the head, or sometimes just right in the middle of the body, back towards the tail, you know, middle of the, not the body, but the middle of the tail.
Right.
Just throw them out there on a jig head, and the shrimp's completely alive, so if something approaches it, it'll twitch around a bit and you know, help excite
the
fish.
Getting the noise factor going.
Yeah, clicking and twitching and, you know, nothing. As soon as I think I'm kind of getting a line on them and figuring out what they want, it'll kind of go dead, and then I'll have to try something else, and I'll get a bite on that. It's been tough, man. It's pushing us to the limits trying to figure it out.
Well, it's a mark of a good captain. You know,
keep trying.
If you're going out and you're fishing one way and expecting the fish to cooperate,
that's a mistake.
You're not going to do well. You're going to have a great day, and then you're going to have a whole bunch of mediocre to very poor days.
Yep.
Because you've got to do what the fish want to do, not what you can't fish the way you want to. You have to fish the way the fish want to eat.
Exactly.
And I get people all the time in here. They come in and they're on the pier and they get sinkers on. I'm like, well, yeah, that's nice, but you get two guys. Put a bobber on that one,
exactly.
Put a sinker on this one.
Exactly.
And you can always change, but if you're both fishing the same way, A, they both have to, there has to be fish there on the bottom, but what happens if the mackerel or the trout or anything else mm-hmm. comes through and they're up by the surface?
Exactly. You got to keep it switched up.
You know, mix and match. It was not uncommon for me when I was doing what you were doing, chartering, to go out and literally have, if out of four lines, two might be one way, two might be another way. Sometimes four would be different, mm-hmm. trying to figure out where the bite was going to be.
Yeah, that's what you've got to do. You get out there and it's not working, you absolutely have got to keep switching up, changing up. It's not the most convenient thing to do. It does take extra work, but that's what it's all about, man. You got to work at it. If it's not working, if it's not working what you're doing, you better be changing.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a simple matter of if you've got three rods out, change that one to one way.
Mm-hmm.
And then if that's still not working, we'll leave that one, but one of the other two, change that one to another thing. I had one day where we had beautiful live shrimp and nothing hit. And I know I'm in a good spot. I know everything about this should be right. I picked a dead one off the deck of the boat, stuck it on there, pretty nasty little shrimp, threw it underneath the mangroves, handed it to the customer, boom, we got hit. I'm dumping shrimp on the deck.
Yeah.
Come on, nasty out. You know, I'm cooking the sun here. You know?
I tell you something I tried the other day too that I've never tried ever. But I just was scrambling. I was in the snook area, and it was in the middle of a little warming trend we had. Water was like 65. It was kind of overcast, just starting to breeze up a little bit. And I saw the snook in the area where we were. Couldn't get them to bite. We had shrimp out. We were fishing them on jig, fishing them on pop and cork, nothing. I threw a little Miradine out there and got a fish to chase it, but he wouldn't hit it. So I just completely thought out of the box. I took a rattle cork and a MR14, that's the smallest Miradine they make.
Right.
Put it about 2 feet behind my cork, and we were in about 2.5 feet of water. I throw it out there, and I start twitching it across the top, let it pause just for a second or two because that Miradine will suspend, slowly fall. Twitch, made the cast. I'm like, you know, I'm kind of feeling like an idiot because no one's ever done this that I know of, and no. I don't know if it'll work, but it feels like it could work because I know I already had a fish chase a bait.
Right.
But I think what happened was, I kept working it, and we started catching snook. We caught over 30 snook just a couple of weeks ago fishing a Miradine hard plastic underneath a bobber, a rattle bobber. And it was steady walking the bobber, stop for just a couple seconds, steady walk it, you know, 3 or 4 feet across
right.
top, let it pause. And they were striking that little, just a greenback color, greenback silver size.
Right.
And it was phenomenal, man. Nothing big, you know, 18 to 24 inches.
But still, like we were talking about, it was awesome. The most visually stunning snook on the there is in that size range, because they skyrocket.
Yeah.
And they do backflips. And they're just so much fun. It's like everything you've ever seen on any bass fishing show on their best moment is an average with that fish.
That's exactly right.
That's like the best bass flip jump that anybody's ever seen is just kind of normal for what a snook will do. And that's amazing. I will tell you, when you said that, there was a guy came in and he was doing the same thing with a rattle trap about 3 to 4 feet below a popping cork in Louisiana.
Is that right?
Because he couldn't get him to hit the lure and he couldn't get him to hit the bait. And you and him in diversely different things. You're the first person I've ever heard of to do that.
Isn't that crazy?
But it's what makes you a good captain. You got to think that out of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
He did it with a rattle trap because if the fish want that noise.
Yeah, it's a lot darker water up there.
Yeah, in Louisiana, if you're not making a lot of noise, you're just not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the reasons the Rockport Rattlers really started selling well is because that extra little bit of noise. But a rattle trap makes way too much noise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe it would work here under a bobber.
Yeah.
But not for redfish. Maybe for snook, but not for redfish. But and the Miradyne is perfect under the bobber.
Yeah, it's silent.
It's perfect because it falls down like that bait died right
there.
That's
exactly right.
He just passed out for whatever reason.
That's right.
He's fluttering down to the bottom. Perfect target.
Mm-hmm.
Cold water fish.
Yeah, it was amazing. I think that bobber really fired them up. They paid attention to that skittering bobber, and they'd kind of look at it as it goes by, I guess, and that they would hit it. Every single strike came after the skittering of the bobber. You'd stop, and that bobber would just start to settle. Boom, and it'd go underwater.
Yep.
It was cool. We missed quite a few strikes because, they'd hit it and swim at it. But
it's so hard because right what you're talking about is when everything's slack.
Yeah.
And there's no way to get a good connection.
Yeah, you had to be quick.
Yeah, basically set the hook right before you leave the dock.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking perfect timing with slack line. That's tough to do, but still you're getting hits.
Yeah, and we weren't getting a hit. We had fish all around us with nothing going on, and we were able to create something out of nothing, which was really cool.
That's an amazing thing. And hats off, buddy. I would have never thought of that.
I told a couple of my buddies since then, man, and I promise you, everybody is like, shut up. You did not do that. And I'm like, I'm just telling you, it worked, and it worked well.
I'm telling you that, it's just kind of funny because the guy I talked to from fishing up in Louisiana did it with a rattle trap because he couldn't keep it where the fish were, and he couldn't get them to hit. He got a couple strikes off the rattle trap, and then he trying to fish bait under the bobber, and he finally said, "Ah, heck, what? I'm gonna put the rattle trap under the bobber." But he wasn't popping it. He was literally, it was choppy, and he was just letting the bobber go up and down, and the rattle trap made enough noise for the redfish to hit it.
That's cool.
So two diversely different universes,
mm-hmm.
and actually similar but drastically different baits.
Yep.
And I would have never thought of doing either one of them. It's not anything that would have ever come into my head.
And
I'd like to think I'm fairly creative.
Yeah, I know. That's why it's important to have buddies and share information and talk about different techniques, because there's been many times talking to a friend that he's mentioned something he tried that he had moderate success with, maybe not even great success. And I thought to myself, there's an application where I could use that I've never tried and ends up working great for me.
The hard part is remembering them all. When you're sitting out there and the fish aren't biting, and I think the worst scenario, people always say, you get these jerks on the boat. No, the jerks don't bother you. Because when somebody's a jerk, you don't really care. They're a jerk anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they get a good day, they get a mediocre day. Oh, well, he was a jerk anyway. But when you've got the nicest people on the planet, you get a group of guys come down or a family and they're just the nicest people you ever met. You just really want to show them everything in the world and have a day they're never going to forget,
right.
And the fish aren't cooperating.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there dragging everything out of your head trying to go, okay. And I've put inline spinners on and dragging everything I could ever
mm-hmm.
think of trying to get fish to eat for some of my customers. And to pull a Miradyne under a popping cork.
I still haven't told Eric about it.
Yeah, that's
let me hear lower.
Yeah, he's that's.
I'm afraid he might call me a BSer, but I'm telling you that is an incredible company. I love Mirror Lures.
You know, I've known Eric for several years, and really nice guy, and he's been a big supporter of the store. I mean, we have 8 feet of Mirror Lure out there in the store. I mean, it's just incredible. I think the best thing about it is, it's an amazing lure, but you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about you and the lure.
Mm-hmm.
Our number one selling bait is a Storm Twitch Stick. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it helps you catch fish. It literally helps you. It's got that lip on it and the twitching and everything it does. It assists you in the fishing.
Right.
The Mirror Lure, it assists you by having the correct size, the correct shape, the correct colors. Everything about it's perfect, except you have to work it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about you and that lure to get that fish. There, it is the one lure. It's all about the two of you. And when you catch fish with it, it was you and that lure doing it together.
Yeah, it's cool, man. I love fooling them.
So, actually, really cool. I know you got to get going. Any last thoughts before we wrap this up?
Any last thoughts for me would be I'm going to keep on praying for warmer weather. And until that happens, I'm going to keep on trying to make it happen in the cold weather. But it's just part of the deal. I'm not worried about it.
All right. Let's do a little promotion for yourself. Name, phone number, website. Obviously, you're going to be able to click on Rhett's picture right next to this interview, and it'll take you right to his website and all that. But go ahead and tell us about it.
Our little company is Beyond Borders Outfitters. We sort of pride ourselves as being a one-stop shop for getting a good quality charter captain. All the guys that we use are hand-picked and born and raised in the area. You can look us up on the internet at beyondbordersoutfitters.com.
How come you just didn't call it Cracker Company?
Yeah, we should have. We should have, because that's what they all are.
It's so much easier. Cracker Company. And, Cracker Fishing Company.
Exactly. It was a whole lot less letters than that. I should have thought of it. But we've also, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, same Beyond Borders. And we just try to keep as much information flowing through there, pictures and videos, to let you know what we're doing on the water at that current point in time. And we strive for nothing more than creating memories of a lifetime.
Having fun.
Exactly. It's all about having fun, buddy.
All right. Well, this is Fishing Frank in the chair here, and it's Captain Rhett Morris. Old friend of mine. I've known Rhett since he was like 11 or 12 years old. God, I'm old. Oh, God. And, you know, it's amazing to watch him and some of these other guys are working in the store, and they come in and go out and watch them grow up and, you know, have their own chartered businesses and, you know, become fishing authorities. You know, it's always kind of nice when you're sitting there kind of as a teacher part, and then you watch the young people just grow up and get so much better. It's amazing. Anyway, Fishing Frank here. Captain Rhett Morris over there. Click on Rhett's picture and a little Beyond Borders logo. It'll take you right to his website. Well, have a great day catching fish. See you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.